Welcome to Bitch Talk, booze interviews straight from the heart of San Francisco. I'm Erin. That's Ange.
Hi.
That's Char.
Hello.
You can find us at bitchtalkpodcast.com where you can sign up for our monthly e-news.
For behind-the-scenes videos and two-minute clips of our interviews, head to our YouTube channel and subscribe.
You can find us every other Thursday morning at 9:30 a.m. at BFF.fm.
And if you like what you hear, rate and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. For the love of God, do it. It really helps.
What up, bitch talkers? We are flashing back to a conversation we had early in the year. Was it like January, you guys?
I think it was Sundance, right?
Yeah, it was Sundance of this year. To a couple of our favorite directors, Betsy West and Julie Cohen. They previously directed one of our favorite documentaries, RBG, which, you know, whatever. We have nothing to say except go see it if you haven't, and RIP to RBG. But their latest documentary is called My Name is Polly Murray. And I'm just going to read what the description is because it's easier than me trying to think about how to describe this film and Polly Murray. But it's 15 years before Rosa Parks refuses to give up her bus seat. Polly Murray fights for social justice. A non-binary Black lawyer, activist, poet, and priest, Murray influences both Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Thurgood Marshall. So basically, Polly Murray was an alien that came down from outer space and influenced all these rad people. And we've never heard of her because why would you in American or any kind of history books?
Right.
And thank goodness for our friends, Betsy and Julie, for actually finding out about her while they were filming the Ruth Bader Ginsburg doc.
Mm-hmm. And we were, first of all, really excited to talk with them again, just because we had so much fun the first time and they do not disappoint. So you're going to hear us just having a lot of fun with our old friends. And we're hopefully going to have them on the show again soon because they just keep cranking them out. They do not stop. And thank God, because they're telling all the stories that we need to hear that, like Erin said, our education system just is not up to par. So
no, they've failed us.
Yeah. We turn to filmmakers like this to teach us, to fill in the gaps, we'll say.
Yeah.
But Polly Murray is incredible and incredible. I mean, there should be, talk about statues. There need to be statues of this woman everywhere in our country. Like, she's laid the groundwork for all of the great people that we admire and have on t-shirts and stickers. She laid the groundwork for them, whether they're a woman fighting for women's rights, gay rights, Black rights, like all of it. She laid
the groundwork. All of the rights.
Religion, even she's more forward thinking than most religious leaders today, you know, and she was a female minister. So
Yeah,
just blown away by this film and hope you check it out now that it's streaming on a broader platform.
Yeah, if you have Amazon, it's streaming, just opened up October 1st. Before we get into the interview with Betsy and Julie, we have a few minutes to catch up. The last time we saw each other, right, was in LA.
Mm-hmm.
Basic beaching, as Char put it.
We were basic beaching.
And then driving very quickly to John Wayne Airport.
Hauling ass.
Woo. With leftover prime rib, which I'm eating right now. Don't judge me, everyone.
That was your carry-on. Yeah, it's a week later and now she's eating the leftovers, but prime rib stays prime. That's why it's called prime.
Yeah, and the dogs got a little. I mean, everyone's a winner. but I, you know, spoiler alert, I made my flight with some minutes to spare. I mean, thank goodness that airport is small and it was a Wednesday mid-afternoon. That's all.
It's a good airport. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Named after John Wayne, which is just so random, but it's it's very SoCal.
Yeah. Next is going to be Donald Trump.
Shove it.
Sorry. I'm sorry. Did I say that name on our podcast?
You always have to take it there.
I did. Sorry.
We're trying to have fun right now.
I think Ange has a couple things to say, and I know Char has a story about her flight.
Oh,
which I don't even know, but I'm already laughing.
Oh, awesome. Well, on the topic of Polly Murray and being revolutionary and still being a female minister of the church, I went to church, my first mass since my dad passed away, actually. So it's been, but even when my dad passed away in December, I hadn't been to church in years and years and years. So the reason I went was because my grandmother, it was the anniversary of my grandmother's death, my grandmother that raised us. She raised all of us, all the kids in the family. And she passed away in 97, I believe. So it's been a while, but still, I mean, I think of her every day. She raised me, you know? So my aunt, in memory of her death anniversary, dedicated a mass to her in San Diego. And my mom wanted to go. And everything my mom wants to do, I do, because she wants to do such few things. The few things she wants, I'm like, I'm there. So I was like, okay, I'll go to mass. We spent the night in San Diego. And this priest went on a rant about being pro-life and how you can't be a Catholic and be pro-abortion, which I love it. I love when they say pro-abortion. He went on and I started feeling like heat, like my ears, my head started ringing. And I was like, I want to fucking leave right now. What am I doing here? But then I was like, think of your grandma. Think of mama. We called her. Think of her. She raised you. That's what I'm here for. But I was like, this is why I don't go to fucking church. And then, you know, just to spite them, I took that body of Christ just because I was hungry. I do not believe that was the body of Christ. I was just hungry. And I actually think the Eucharist tastes good. Char, do you agree? It's kind of got this wafer crisp. It's like a Necco wafer, but not sweet. It's delicious. So fuck you. I ate that shit because I was hungry. That was not the body of Christ. Man. Never again.
Of course, that was the homily that you had to listen to. I mean, it couldn't have been something else that was like about, you know, something that would have made you feel better. It had to be that.
Yes, he could have talked about immigration. He was a Mexican priest. He could have talked about immigration. We were in San Diego, of all places. You know, he could have talked about so many other things that I actually believe in. But I think it was a sign from God telling me that I shouldn't go to church anymore. So there's that.
Anyway. But were you wearing your special necklace?
I was not. God damn it. You're right. Well, I was going on a trip with my family. I didn't bring the vibrator, but you know, it is a beautiful necklace. I should just bring it everywhere. Yeah. Duly noted.
Yeah. Can
Shout
I
out to Chang at yeah. Love Crave for our Vesper vibrator?
Yes. T Chang. good job, Ange. I was just gonna say to your point. And story about you going, you know, you haven't been to church, blah, 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 forever. And of course, this is the homily. I don't know anything about Catholicism. So thanks for spurting out some of the words, Char. I don't know what I'm talking about. But my good friend and oldest friend, Megan, and her family, a few Christmas Eves ago, whenever that was, went to church for their grandmother, just because those are the times, you know, they showed up because they're Catholic light. And that priests, he went on a rampage about on Christmas Eve about being pro-abortion and pro-life. And they were like, this is the last time we go. And I think it was, I think it was the last time at least the three women went. So her sister and her mom were just like,
Yeah. Oh, I didn't even. Yeah. And he was like, you know, if you don't want to have the child, you just give it up for adoption. That's it. What's the problem? Like, oh, really, man? Yeah, there's.
I mean,
what's the problem? It's so easy, you fucker. Oh God, I was so mad.
I guess God really just doesn't want you guys to go to mass because it's like I still go to mass and I don't remember the last time I got that beaten into my head about abortion and like all of that. But
maybe you have a good pastor. There are some really cool ones. Yeah, I remember, when I was a kid, there was a cool one.
You guys used to go once in like 10 years.
wasn't me. I didn't go.
The Lord works in mysterious ways. But the one thing I will say is churches are really beautiful. This was one of those like Spanish style, mission style churches. Like, I don't know, 200 foot ceilings. I don't know how huge this church was. It was beautiful. I love looking at a church.
I love being a Catholic church. I love. They're beautiful. Like the one over here at USF is gorgeous.
Oh yeah, and where we used to do yoga on Tuesdays. Oh,
but that's not Catholic.
It's more non-denominational.
I love
all inclusive, but
not Grace Cathedral.
Grace Cathedral.
It is
Grace Cathedral. Yeah,
back in the day.
Oh, simpler times. Yeah, but I like when we got there, I was like, wow, it's beautiful. And then I walked in and I was like,
And then like your head exploded. That's what exactly happened.
Yeah. But I stand by, the Eucharist is delicious.
Good for you, Ange. Char, before we wrap up this little mini basic, what happened to you on your flight back from LA last week?
I was the...
And so glad... Oh, Char, so glad you're alive from that piece of glass that was in your glass at dinner again last Tuesday. Because I have reflected a lot about that moment. And fucked I don't up. Know why we didn't say anything.
Anyways, we fucked up. I mean, did your shit burn? Did you have some guts coming out?
Is your esophagus okay?
There were some shards. Easily shards from that piece. Anyway, go on.
Char had shards.
Mm-hmm. In her shard. Char sharded shards.
Jesus.
Okay.
Words. It's funny that you are eating our prime rib dinner from last week because I don't know. We don't think we talked about this on the basic on the beach is that we had all these leftovers. Aaron and I and we're getting on a plane.
and we rushed to repack your bag in the trunk of my car.
And Aaron doesn't even know that is that as, I told her this a little bit the last time we talked, is that we dropped Aaron off at, because she had her flight right away. Mine was like a couple hours away. We get to my terminal. We opened up and we're like, oh, it's not busy. Okay, let's repack. And Ange is like, Do you want to take your blind spotting blanket? Aaron opted not to take hers, and I was like, oh, I wasn't gonna take mine either, but maybe I can. And then she's like, oh, well, we can repack your stuff right now. There's nobody here, so we're like repacking.
I'm an expert packer, by the way.
So you say.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
I Tetris that shit. Did the food. Oh, no.
So we had the bag and we had this. And then you and I even talked about that. We go, Angela looked at me and goes, do you want to stuff it in here? The bag might break. And I'm like, well, we could try it. And so we have the brown bag. We have the food at the bottom. We put the blanket on the top. It fits perfectly. So I'm like, all right, cool. And then, I check in my bag. Oh, no. I check in my bag. I have my stuff. Remember, I had the rock star. I drank my rock star before I crossed the security gate. I carried my stuff into security and went through security all fine. I looked at it. When it went through security, I was like, oh, it's a little flimsy, but I'm just going to the gate. It'll be fine. That's the last famous words, right? It'll be fine. So I get to the gate. I go to the bar, to the restaurant that's right next to it. There's a little bar restaurant right next to it. I get a couple of drinks there. And I'm just sitting. All good, sitting pretty. And then it's time for me to board my plane. I get up and all of a sudden it's like,
oh no, the horseradish sauce.
No.
All the sauces. Well,
so everything is still at the bottom. But
I'm worried about the sauces, by the way.
But the bag is the bag dead. Is like starting to die. Like it has like a big rip on the side of it. And then so I was like, and then I'm like walking. So then I'm like, I got like 5 minutes. I walk up and down the nearby gates to see if I can find a place where I can get a bag, like any kind of bag, a plastic bag. And I'm like, I'm not going to. So I have to hug it. Right? So I get on the plane hugging this Emporium brown bag with prime rib at the bottom of it and a blind spotting blanket.
What else was in there? I feel like there was weren't there two sets of leftovers?
Yeah, or
was
it only the potato?
The big potato was in a separate container because it was so big. This is like a 5-pound potato, yeah, everyone, guys, that's listening.
Come on.
It's like a really big potato. And there's like three sauces. There's the horseradish sauce, the prime rib dipping, like au jus.
I'm getting on the plane and, you know, it's Southwest. You have to get first come, first serve. So I'm like, get on the plane. I'm like running. Get get on the plane, I need a place to put my bag. And I was like, it's so stupid hugging my bag so it won't rip anymore.
You're hugging your leftovers. You're like, I can fit the potato here and the prime rib there.
So the bag is still intact. The blind spotting bag is the blind spotting blanket is in there. I get in. I get to the back of the plane because I'm like, I'm going to be the last one off of this thing. I'm not going to let everybody watch me.
Right. I'll go to the back. Thank you.
So I went all the way to the back, found an empty thing. I put it up there. Oh, I had my sweatshirt in there. I put my sweatshirt in there. Did that. Went to my seat. Went to sleep. Had a great flight back. When I sat down, actually, I looked at the floor and I saw the handle ripped off, and it was on the floor of the plane.
Oh my god.
So I'm like, oh my god, what's it gonna look like when I open that? And then of course the plane takes off, and then you know, like when you land and you can hear like all the stuff rumbling up top, and I'm like, oh my
the
god.
Sauces, the potatoes.
I'm looking up, I'm going, what's happening up there? Everybody gets off of the plane. Everybody gets off of the plane.
There's more to this. Oh god. Okay.
Open it up. I pull it out, and it's like the bag is like just tattered. There's no more handles. It's like ripped and free. And then here you are, Ange. The sauce is leaked.
I knew it. Oh god. But
it didn't leak. It didn't leak so much that it was it wasn't the sauces. It was the prime rib juice. So
gross. That is so fucking gross.
So you know, like, oh my god.
Sorry.
The brown paper bag at the corners, you can see a little bit of the, you know, like it's like,
oh, like, I know, like that wet. Look. Yeah.
I'm like, what the fuck am I gonna do with this thing? And so I take it out, and then I look at my sweatshirt. My sweatshirt had it's. You know what it was? My sweatshirt had absorbed all the juices.
I thought you said the blind. I thought you were gonna say the blind spotting blanket absorbed all the juices.
That's what I was afraid of. I was like, oh, I'm gonna ruin. My blind spotting blanket didn't even survive. It was ruined. But it wasn't. It was my sweatshirt. And I'm like, well, that's gonna have to go straight to the wash after that. So I pull it out.
So
the bag is just no more. At least when I got on the plane, at least it still had handles. There were no more handles. There was a rip down the middle.
So I had to like wet stains everywhere, like juice stains.
So I had to take the thing and hug it again and get off of this thing, hugging this thing so it wouldn't fall apart anymore. And I'm like, and then of course, you know, when you get off the plane, there's all these people that are getting ready to get on the plane, and I'm the last one off the plane.
They probably were waiting for you. There's like, right? There's one more person. I'm so sorry. I don't know what she's doing.
So I'm walking off of it like this. Protecting my
prime rib and baked potato
and my blanket when my blood-soaked sweatshirt.
Oh,
like, what happened to her? I really hope you enjoyed those leftovers. Like, did you eat every bite and just like?
Oh yeah.
You had to fucking earn that.
So this is what I was like. I need to find where am I going to put this? I'm not going to carry this all the way to the other to get my bag and everything else. So as soon as I got off the plane, I went to the seats at the gate, took the bag. The bag was shredded and gross or whatever. So I just crumpled it up and threw it away. I took my sweatshirt, which was already kind of a mess anyways. And I took the two leftover containers and wrapped it in my bag, or wrapped it in my sweatshirt, and just tied it up, and you know,
smart
in a bow. Mm-hmm. So, and then I took the blind spotting blanket, and I undid it, and then I put the
blanket in, around,
and then I rolled it over, and then I collapsed it with its little elastic clasp.
Smart.
And then I had a little handle, and then that's how I got through the rest of my trip.
Good. Blind spotting saves again.
Can you believe the amount of stories we've gotten from these fucking blankets?
No, I just...
It's the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, I still don't have mine, even though I could have taken it.
Oh, my God.
Well, that was hilarious. Thank you. Okay, I just have to asterisk. It has nothing to do with my pack job. Because... It was the integrity... It was the integrity of the bag that was.
Yeah,
the
I mean, at the end of the day, I was like, I had just wished. I mean, like, if we had double bagged, or if I had at least had a plastic, like, if I had that Disneyland bag that I had used,
yes,
or that I'd bought, like, that was in the.
I had another plastic bag in the car too that we could.
Like, if I had like 45 bags in the car,
like, if I did, if I had
reusable bags, yeah,
that would have totally saved me, but. Again, God works in mysterious ways. He wanted me to have a story for this.
And it ripped. Yeah. Like, you went the whole way to the bar and it didn't rip. Jesus.
Literally.
Oh, God, I'm crying. That's hilarious. Thank you. That was fucking funny.
I knew it was going to be funny when I told it to you. I was like, I getting off the bag. It's like, it's this. Oh, actually, good. I have a bag with me.
I don't know how you stopped yourself from not texting me this, Char. Like,
she couldn't. So, she had to hold the bag, Ange.
No, I can't believe you didn't text me and tell me, because we repacked her bag and shoved all this shit in her check-in, and like, we thought we had it good. Oh my God.
And I was like, well, I didn't have that many places to go. Where did I go? It was a direct flight. It's like I went to the gate. And
right. How did the handle fly off mid-flight? That's
the dude, when I saw it, it was like
the handle was like, I'm out of here. Yeah. It sucks.
Oh my God. Bloody sweatshirt. I mean, seriously. Well,
that's good.
Thanks for catching us up, Char. I hate to cut you off, but you have to go. And anyways, here's our interview from Sundance earlier this year with West and Julie Cohen talking about their film, My Name is Pauly Murray, which is streaming right now on Amazon.
Watch it. We love them.
Hey, bitches.
What's up, friend?
Hey, how are you?
Hi, guys. I have such a strong memory of actually being in like a hotel suite in San Francisco where we had done like a ton of interviews that were all very staid and boring. And then you guys came in with your big talk energy. And we were like, oh, like now I'm awake.
Oh, we're like, ta-da.
Bitches are here.
Yeah.
Yes, we remember it fondly, too. We look back to that all the time. It was so
fun.
And we've been waiting for this moment ever since. So,
yeah, but Julie, we saw you in 2019 at the Planned Parenthood brunch.
Yes,
for like a minute.
At the Planned Parenthood part.
And you yelled, "There's my bitches from across the room."
Yeah,
it was so special.
We were like, us.
Of course, we turn. We know. We're like, who knows?
Friends. Sorry, you're not together in a suite right now. You're.
No, we're far away. We're far, far away from each other. It's I'm in San Francisco.
I'm in Southern California right now with my family for a little bit, but still posted in San Francisco.
Yeah.
We have been following you all along, and every time we see that you've done something, like, your accomplishments feel like successes for all of us. So the video for Dr. Jill Biden, I'm going to say doctor every time I say her name.
Yes, please.
The doctor. the video you guys did at the DNC, Aaron and I were texting like, did you watch it? It was amazing. Just everything you guys touch.
You guys get, every time you guys are in the news, you're in our Slack or our group text.
Always. Always. Like, look what they're doing. They're so cool. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh I guess that's like the only people who think we're cool. Many people like our work, but nobody says we're
cool. I'm going to close the door. My husband's across the hallway, and I think he like might be like really shocked right now. Anyway,
yeah,
we're happy to be back with you.
We're very happy. We are at Sundance 2021, everybody. I'm Erin from Bitch Talk. I have my co-host Angela Tabora. We're also representing Films Gone Wild, and we have the wonderful Julie Cohen and Betsy West from the documentary. My name is Polly Murray. Ange, I'm going to let you start first because there's a lot to talk about with this film.
Yeah, I have to start by saying we've brought this up all the time on Bitch Talk, how our education system is very Eurocentric. And even when it does come to stories of other cultures, they even get that wrong. And there's major gaps, including Polly Murray. So how did you come across this beautiful woman and how did you decide to tell her story?
Well, you ladies will be happy to know that it was RBG who first put us on to Polly Murray because Ruth Bader Ginsburg, as a lawyer arguing for women's rights, had put Polly Murray's name on the cover of the first brief that she wrote before the Supreme Court because of an article that Polly Murray had written in the 1960s arguing about using the 14th Amendment to fight for women's rights. So, you know, we knew that, but we didn't know much more, frankly. After RBG, we did a little bit of research and just went, holy moly, look at this person, and had the same feeling that you did. Like, I didn't know about her. How come I didn't know about this extraordinary thinker, activist, influencer. So we just thought, hey, let's go for it.
And when you started digging into this film and the history of Polly Murray and started pitching it, were other people surprised by the story?
Yes. I mean, I think that was a pretty universal reaction we got, not only, you know, in terms of going out for looking for funding for the film, but also bringing on other members of the team. You know, like, how do I not know more about this person? Once people understand what Polly contributed, you know, in legal thinking to women's rights and to civil rights, in, you know, this amazing body of poetry and nonfiction writing, in spirituality, becoming the first black person identified as a woman to be ordained as an Episcopal priest. You know, activism like desegregating restaurants in Washington, D.C. in 1943, like 17 years before the Woolworth's lunch counter sit-in, getting arrested for sitting in the quote-unquote white section of a bus in 15 years before Rosa Parks. So I was like thing after thing, and you're like, how did I not know this? Which just sort of seemed like a kind of challenge to us of like, okay, well, let's figure out if there's a way to tell this person's story, despite, you know, unlike RBG, such a vibrant on-camera presence that who we filmed for RBG. Obviously, this is someone who died 35 years ago. We're not going to have that aspect to it on top of a name that isn't a household name. But like, you know, I think it was, but you know, that's kind of part of the story. Like, why don't we know who Polly Murray is, which is why, what was the impetus between the title? Like, my name is Polly Murray. Like, hello, introducing myself here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that the way that you tell the story and you introduce these different things that she did, like 15 years before Rosa Parks did this, 10 years before RBG, it really hits home that impact of there's something wrong here. And I hope that sets the bigger discussion for how we teach children and how we talk about our history. I really do. I really hope this film is shown throughout schools across the country and the world, really. Is that a conversation that you've been having or?
Yeah, we hope that too. I mean, I think that was our primary goal. And, you know, we were extraordinarily lucky that Polly saved everything.
As her
great niece discovered after Polly's death. And it was every single piece of writing and letters and diaries and interviews and everything that went to the amazing Schlesinger Library at Harvard, where, you know, we had the pleasure of being in the vault there to see the Polly Murray collection, which is huge. It's, you know, nearly 150 boxes, but, you know, along with all with other great American women whose archives are there. And, you know, we discovered that the photographs that Polly had saved over the years and these audio tapes, and that allowed us to try to bring stories, Polly's story, to life in a very personal way. I mean, you know, it's a fascinating and complex story. Polly was a feisty, determined, brilliant woman who had many ups and downs in life, along with the incredible challenge of being a non-binary person at a time when that was just like unknown, or not, if not unknown, just unacceptable to most people. Mm-hmm. And that was a really hard challenge. So, you know, we were able to, you know, move forward with this material.
Can I ask about the non-binary and gender story that is a really big part of Polly's story? Was there ever a moment where it was questionable for you two to shine a light on it?
Yes, we went into the project not really knowing or fully understanding to what extent we were going to get into that subject matter. Unlike the fight for racial equality, the fight for gender equity, fighting for gay rights or trans rights was not part of Polly's public struggle, wasn't something that Polly talked about publicly at all. Following the work of one of the authors we interview in the film, Rosalind Rosenberg, who wrote pretty extensively about that subject, and then also looking ourselves in Polly's archives, in which there's not a ton of information, but there is certainly Polly left in an archive for future students and researchers to see, these unbelievably poignant plaintive letters to doctors going back to 1940, saying, you know, in stumbly language, because, like, you know, just say, like, I think I'm a man. Like, can I take testosterone? Because Polly had read an article in a newspaper, I think was even in the late 30s, talking about how people could take testosterone, not necessarily as a gender reassignment thing, but for other purposes. And it seemed like, oh, that could be relevant. Saying, like, can somebody do surgery on me and tell me if there are male organs inside me? You know, so much of Polly's words that are in the film that are recorded on audio or video or are written in letters and journals feel like they're kind of like a cry to be heard. Like, I want you to, as Polly's grandniece says in the film, like, I want you to see me. I want you to hear me. And that seemed like part of the Polly story that was maybe like a cry to be heard, even if it was a cry into the future.
Yeah. And I think we agreed with Polly's biographer, Rosalind Rosenberg, that Polly's in-betweenness, the fact that Polly was a non-binary person, and also Polly's in-betweenness racially, mixed race, as a woman in a male, you know, traditionally male profession. I mean, in many ways, Polly was an outsider. And I think, you know, Rosalind's argument was that this was key to who Polly was and allowed Polly to make the discoveries that Polly did about the arbitrariness of categories for women, for African Americans, for any kind of, you know, arbitrary pigeonholing was just didn't make any sense to her. And that was, so her personal life really informed the amazing professional accomplishments that Polly had.
Yeah, I'm glad you talk about that because, you know, and that's even with her work for social justice in conjunction with her deep religiousness that even RBG, you know, was kind of baffled by. And it happens all the time. It's just like, we're the religious right. And if you're liberal, you can't have that. Like, there's room for all of it. The difference is our acceptance of that. And so I'm really glad that you touch on that. And one thing that really stuck with me that she says is she hopes, I'm quoting, that I live to see my lost causes found.
Yeah.
That really has stuck with me because it's just she had that outlook. That's why she was able to do these things. It's not a lost cause because it's impossible. It just hasn't been found yet. Right. And you both have covered Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Polly Murray, Dr. Jill Biden. She's a doctor, everybody. After covering these brilliant women, has it changed what you think it takes to be a trailblazer like that? Do you think it takes a special something? Do we all have that in us, that ability to make these huge impacts?
Well, the three people that you've mentioned have some things in common. And I would say just like a relentless optimism, you know, not someone who's never sad or depressed, but just like relentlessly, I'm gonna push through whatever barriers anyone puts in my way. Like having that kind of mindset. I mean, Polly more than any of these other characters had the height of the wall constantly being put in front of her. And as Polly says in a 1970 interview that we listened to, you know, it's like the bar keeps being raised. I mean, the number of degrees that this person had was just like incredible. Like, you know, so many accomplishments, so much. I mean, you don't even know that we have so many firsts in the film. There are so many more. And yet, you know, when it comes time to go for tenure, like the tenure committee is like, yeah, but you know, you're not really brilliant.
Yeah.
Like, you know, just like no matter how far you go, someone's going to put a wall up. But like Polly was just going to scale that and jump over it because of the level of not give upness in, you know, instilled in deep in that spirit.
You know, and I think something that Polly's lover early on said has struck with me. Polly, she said, you know, I can't believe you can write about being a Negro and not be bitter. How can you do that? And I think that, you know, Polly's writings are tough and fierce, and she's taking FDR to task. And,
yes,
you know, she's in confrontation by typewriter, but there isn't bitterness there. There is just determination to jump over that wall and to keep going. And, you know, that's something that served Polly very well.
Yeah. And I was going to say, I do love the story because it resonates with me of Polly and her students, and that she would keep using the word Negroes and they would cringe a little bit, but they really respected her. And I get that curmudgeonly aspect of her because I'm like that too. But I loved that story and thank you for including it.
Yeah, Polly's students at Brandeis were really amazing people, and hearing them sort of growing to recognize everything that Polly was, you know, it's easy for a college student to look at a 50-year-old professor and, you know, they were radical activists at that time. And the teacher is like, you know, work within the system. And it sort of, it would have been easy for them to dismiss her, the person that they knew to be, they knew as a woman professor, but like they were able to see, you know, like spend a few weeks in that classroom and you start to understand, wait a second, there's really something extraordinary that this person has to bring. And I think a lot of that had to do with the human connection that Polly gave, that it became clear that Professor Murray was looking at them as human beings with a ton of potential and was going to help bring them along educationally, and then all of a sudden you care about someone and you trust them and you start to want to know more about their history and what they've contributed. And that's, you know, they came to really understand Pauli very, very deeply, I think.
Yeah, for people like Pauli who have achieved greatness, they're always going to say, you know, I didn't do this alone. I did this with as a group, but I want to bring up Aunt Pauline and her relationship with her, you know, who she just gave her unconditional love. She's someone that she really needed as part of her foundation to give her the strength to do what she then moved on to do. So I really feel like we should all try to be like Pauli Murray, but we should also try to be Aunt Pauline to everyone around us, to give that strong foundation for these people around us that can achieve this greatness.
Yeah, I mean, Aunt Pauline is a great character, and I wish we could have spent more time on Aunt Pauline, because she took in this or her orphan niece and did give unconditional love and ultimately understood that Pauli's, you know, to some extent understood Pauli's gender struggle, you know, called her my boy girl, you know, really... Mm-hmm. Didn't make her feel bad because wanted to dress as a boy, not as a girl. And then as that went on, I mean, Aunt Pauline was an extraordinary person, and really, I think, gave Pauli the foundation to meet the challenges that she did in her life.
On that note, we have to wrap, but it was such a pleasure seeing you two again, Julie Coe and Betsy West. Congratulations on the film, and I'm sure we'll be seeing more of you two as 2021 rolls on.
Thanks, Erin. Thanks, Angela.
We love you guys. Thank you.
Yeah, you too. Thank you.
If you like what you hear, rate and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
For more information about us, you can head to bitchtalkpodcast.com.
This podcast is created, hosted, and executive produced by Erin Lim.
My co-host is Angela Tabora, a.k.a. Captain Party.
The show's edited by producer Shar.
We're powered by GoTo Productions.